Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 222 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Jumping straight back into it. Fight reviews this past Saturday, the 20th of May, from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, on ESPN pay-per-view, ESPN Plus pay-per-view, the Plus, the app. For the undisputed lightweight championship of the world at 135 pounds, Devin Haney remains undefeated and retains his undisputed lightweight world titles and gains the 30th victory of his career with a hard-fought and, to some people, controversial. We'll get into that. Unanimous decision victory over 12 rounds against Vasily Lomachenko, who takes the third professional loss of his career. Haney got the win by scores of 115-113, 116-112, and 115-113 again. All right, Mike, I'm going to start with you. What's your reaction to this?
Hard, close fought fight. Going into the fight last week, I think we both kind of agreed. I think we both said our brain said Devin Haney, but like our heart, being the sympathetic old fool that I am, you know, I wanted to see Vasyl Lomachenko have one great performance left in the tank and then, you know, become undisputed and then kind of like ride off into the sunset. You know, I thought Loma started really, really well. You know, the kind of going back and forth. I thought Haney had a good tactic and kind of like going to the body like a lot. And I think it did kind of slow Lomachenko around in some of the later rounds because I can't remember exactly what round it was, but there was one where Loma took a body shot. And then he kind of like went for a little walk, kind of like pulled his shorts up a little bit. And I don't know if you could, he sold it really well. You know, it was kind of like a poker face. There was no grimace from him. But in those later rounds, I thought Loma kind of gave it up. I know he said in, you know, the press conference that he gave up the 12th, you know, he thought he was ahead on the scorecards and he kind of like, you know, didn't really put much into it, which is kind of odd, right? You haven't seen the scorecard, so no. If I was his corner team, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? I think we're doing really well. I think we could be up, but just go in there and steal that last round, you know? Put rubber stamp it. Make sure, you know, if that's his real reason for doing that, it wasn't down to fatigue or whatever, then, you know, what does he look like now? You know, losing essentially by a round. You know, on my scorecard, I thought Loma just snuck it. It's one of those weird ones where I thought I could see a draw, and I could see Lomachenko winning it, but I don't think Devin won it, which sounds odd, right? Because it's only like a one round swing, but I could see a draw and I could see Loma winning it. I didn't see Devin winning seven rounds. I just didn't see it. You know, I thought there were some close rounds and Devin, I think, won some rounds closely, but some of the rounds that Lomachenko won, I thought he won, you know, really, really well, which doesn't make a difference. You only get one round, right? But I thought Lomachenko won it. You know, and are we going to jump into the 10th round right now? You know, that scorecard by Moretti, where Loma kind of backed up Haney, like it kind of looked like he could have jumped at him and maybe have knocked him down. And, you know, Haney looked a little bit out of sorts during that round. And then Moretti gives that 10th round, probably the easiest round out of all of them to score. He gives that one round to flipping Haney. Which didn't make, I know people are going to be shouting at the podcast now going, well, that didn't make a difference because he would have just been one round closer on that card because that was the one card that had it, you know, further afield than everyone else. But it just kind of like, you're like, what, you know, what are we watching here? You know, when that's kind of the easiest round out of all 12 to score. And that's the one that he got like dramatically wrong.
Going back to the 12th round, how you touched on it, how Loma did say that he kind of took his foot off the gas because he thought he was ahead on the scorecards in 12th round. If you are to trust CompuBox and the stats, Loma was actually still way busier in terms of punch output in the 12th round, which was strange that Maybe he felt that internally that he, and maybe he was comparing himself to the previous rounds, in terms of his own body and how he felt like, oh, I wasn't as busy as some other rounds. So that's maybe why he said it. But if you look at the actual CompuBox stats, his punch output was higher. And it wasn't like it was like by like higher by three or four punches. I think it was higher by at least 20. So he was the busier fighter, right?
Yeah, I actually have it. So in the 12th round, Haney threw 37, landed 11. And in the 12th round, Lomachenko threw 55 and landed 13. So yeah, he threw 18 more punches in the 12th.
Yeah, so it's kind of strange. I don't know if the right word is strange, but it's interesting to hear him say, oh yeah, I kind of took my foot off the gas in the 12th round because I thought I was ahead, so I didn't put as much effort into it. Because he still threw almost 20 more punches and did land two more punches. Haney was obviously more accurate in terms of percentage of his punches thrown, but Loma was still the busier fighter. So, you know, how judges score differently. Do you score by activity, how many punches you've thrown, and then you land, and you know, who's the busier fighter? Sometimes that happens. But, and then you say, going back to that 10th round, Moretti scored it for Haney, but I think I agree with that, how you said that Loma, that was probably his best round. He hurt Haney. I don't think Haney was hurt as much as people think, but it was a significant shot. And Moretti gave it to Haney. So, yeah, that was strange. But, you know, it's not like we haven't seen this before and we won't see it again. It's judging in boxing, of course. But let me ask you this, now that we kind of dissected a little bit, a couple of rounds here. Oh, actually, before I ask you this, I do want to shout out Haney's body work, because I think according to the stats, he landed like 50 something shots to the body. His body work was excellent. He definitely focused a lot on the body. And you also got to think about it. There's a lot of people, like when you're watching fights, boxing in particular, you see the shots to the face, to the head. Those are the ones you remember, like, oh, because it's right in your face. And then you see on your face or on the fighter's face, you see the bruises, the redness, the blood, you know, the eye closing and all that. So it's kind of a visual that's right in front of you. Whereas to the body, you don't really see that. But it's like, you know, money in the bank. You're hitting the body, it's money in the bank, money in the bank. So, I mean, Haney didn't, and then let me know if you agree or not, but Haney's body work was excellent. Like I said, I think he landed like 50 or so punches or more. I think he was in the 50s range. And I feel like he's not getting enough credit for that, like in general, you know? I don't think it was controversial. What do you think?
Just to confirm what you were saying about the 12th round, since I've got it on me, the 12th round was actually the most amount of punches thrown by Lomachenko. He had two rounds where he threw 55 punches, the fifth round and the 12th round. So for him to say that he took a round off seems kind of bizarre now, looking at those stats.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why when he said that, I remember thinking, I was like, oh, I was like, he looked pretty standard to me. Like, you know, he's pretty active. And then you look at the stats and you see that, now that you say it, it was one of his busiest rounds in the whole fight, which was the final round, the last round, ironically. But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch, but I think we know Haney's not going to want it. But you got to give credit. You got to give credit to Haney. He signed the deal with Top Rank. He went to Australia twice. He beat Kambosos twice, took his titles. Then he fought Lomachenko in three fights. You know, I know a lot of people don't give him credit for the Kambosos fights, but for legacy and to become the guy with the titles, he went over there. I mean, does it really matter who had the titles at the moment? Like, Kambosos was the guy. And he went over there twice to Australia, to enemy territory, and got him. And then he fights Lomachenko in the third fight to defend his undisputed titles. And I don't think it was controversial. like you said, like I know you said that you could see a draw or Lomachenko, but you don't really see Haney winning. I think it could have swung either way. I think it's just one of those rare fights. I was talking to some people about it. If you compare it to a couple weeks ago where we had another lightweight clash between Davis and Ryan, this fight between Loma and Haney was the definition of boxing skill between those two fighters. Ryan Garcia and Gervonta Davis, I guess from Ryan's perspective, was not. But, you know, Davis obviously ended it early. He had boxing skill. He uses boxing skill, and then it was able to get the TKO. But in terms of the entire fight lasting, the whole 12 rounds, Haney and Loma was the definition of boxing skill. That was the sweet science, if you want to call it like that. So I give credit to Haney, man. He's the guy. He might not be the money guy like Davis or even Ryan, but he's, you talk about, I mean, the best guy. I know we have an eye test and everybody, you know, we're going to probably touch on Shakur Stevenson right now. He was in the ring. There was like a photo that a photographer caught where like Stevenson's kind of looking at him from across the ring, which is, that's a great photo. If I was Stevenson, I would frame that. I would blow that up and frame that. That's a great shot. Whoever, shout out to the photographer who got that. I wish we had the name, but yeah, that's a great shot. But I know we all look at the eye test like, oh, well, Stevenson's probably the guy. And then obviously Davis is, you know, up there. But if you want to look at resume and who has the titles, who's the guy? I mean, do you agree that you have to give it to Devin Haney, regardless of, oh, he doesn't draw money or he doesn't sell out arenas all over the country or he doesn't make like $15 million or, you know, whatever. Like, can we agree now that Haney is the guy? Let's give him the credit. What do you think?
I don't think he's the guy. I think Shakur beats him. I think it was a good performance. And like you said, like, you know, I think he went over there and, you know, Kambosos probably isn't the best person in the division, but at that time he had the belt and, you know, that's why he was willing to go over to Australia twice to face Kambosos to make himself undisputed. And, you know, the results against, you know, Lomachenko, you know, went in his favor, good performance from him. He showed something a little bit different to what we had normally seen, I guess, of Devin, a different style to win that fight. But on that performance, even though that's the best performance we've seen of Devin so far, I think Shakur deals with him pretty easily, unless we see a different layer, maybe he's like an onion, right? Maybe he's got all these different layers and we won't see them until he gets in there with these different opponents. And all I'm going is off what we've seen so far and off, you know, Linares, off the fight against Lomachenko, different styles, but he's hittable, right? And I think Shakur would probably deal with him, you know, right now. And I think maybe Davis, I could see Davis being one of those fights where he's just losing every single round. But like Canelo, like Wilder, like Gervonta's done before in other fights, he's patient, he's confident, and he's like, sometime in these 12 rounds, I'm going to catch you, and it's going to be lights out. It's going to be all that she wrote, you know, because just these fighters have that, and, you know, Gervonta has that power, and he's done it before. And I think, you know, Devin, unfortunately, gets hit a little bit too much. But yeah, he's still a good fighter, still a good performance from him. But yeah, at the minute, even though he's undisputed, I don't think he's the best in the division.
In terms of the eye test, like I said, I think there's a lot of people who would agree with that. Stevenson, and I think you have to even consider Davis. Stevenson and Davis are probably, in terms of the eye test, like a lot of people have been looking at Terrence Crawford for years, you know, even though he's been stuck on one side of the street and the boxing politics and all that, and he's had the WBO title, and Spence and PBC fighters have had all the titles on their side, but everybody's always said, well, Crawford's the guy, the eye test, like he's, you know, he's got that killer instinct and stuff, which I understand, but Spence is still an excellent fighter and it's still a 50-50 fight. But I think with like I said, with Stevenson and Gervonta Davis, you know, some people might say, oh, no, it's Stevenson easily. And some people say might say, oh, no, it's Gervonta Davis. He's the guy at 135. In terms of talent, I'm not even talking about drawing power and fame and money. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about talent, like the guy. But I mean, I after this fight and just Haney being so young and taking the risks that he's had in leaving Eddie Hearn and DAZN and going the pathway to become undisputed, signing with Top Rank, going to Australia twice, and now finding Lomachenko, who was still very dangerous and one of the best fighters of this generation. I give Haney credit, man. I give Haney credit, and the fight was close. It was a tactical performance between both of them. It'd be one thing if it was like a complete shutout by Lomachenko. It'd be one thing, and then Haney still got the nod. But because Haney fought well, and I know people are going to disagree, like, oh no, Lomachenko got the win and stuff, and I think he deserves credit, man. I think I'm on the bandwagon, like. I'm going to give him the credit, and he's the guy, you know? And until somebody beats him for those titles, you know, in terms of the talent and the man, and I'm just talking about talent. I'm not talking about drawing power, like I'm saying, like financial. Haney's the guy at 135. He's the guy.
You agree, though, or disagree with that Davis and Shakur probably beat him right now, even off the performance that he had against Loma?
I think Stevenson beats him. I think a Haney-Davis fight is a more competitive fight between both of them than a Haney-Stevenson fight. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could see Devin kind of piecing up Davis until, you know, Davis catches him, if he's able to catch him. But if you're fighting Davis, once you get ahead on the scorecards, kind of like he did in a couple of his previous fights, Devin just rode the bike. He went around the ring. If you remember when he fought Linares and then Linares kind of rocked him, you can see like, the next couple of rounds, he was kind of like, I'm not having anything to do with this. I'm just going to ride this out. I'm already ahead on the cards.
Right.
Devin is like that. He's kind of like very businesslike. He's like, you know what? Like, this is entertainment, but I've got to protect myself. I've got to protect my O because that's how it works in terms of pay, unfortunately. And if this is a stinker, I'm just here for the W.
Right. Yeah. No, that happens. That happens. I think, obviously, like we just touched on, the most competitive fights for him is against Stevenson and Davis. They're still going to be entertaining fights, whether he fights both of them eventually or he fights one or the other first or whatever. They would be entertaining fights regardless. But like I said, I think Stevenson has a little easier time with him than Davis does. But Davis has the knockout power. And I'm telling you, like those three right now are the guys at 135. They're the guys.
If what Paulie Malignaggi said on Twitter is true, that Devin Haney fight week or sometime within this week signed a two fight deal to stay with Top Rank.
Was it a two fight deal or I don't know what the actual details were. I just know that.
I think he said he signed an extension of like two fights or something like that, maybe 2 years or exactly.
Like right before the Lomachenko fight, Top Rank re-signed Devin Haney.
Do you think deep down Top Rank wanted Devin to win, kind of like pass the torch, because he's now a Top Rank fighter?
If you want to get conspiracy theory here, I mean, maybe. He's young. He's what, 24? He's, you know, in terms of investing in the future?
Yeah.
Maybe. Lomachenko's 35, you know, like, you know, if we're going to go into the shadows like that, into the deep waters, like, yeah.
We've got to discuss it, right? Like, that's what the listeners want. They want us to touch on that, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, and then so according to Paulie Malignaggi, whether, you know, you trust his opinion or not, or whatever you think of him as a fighter, he signed it like the week of the fight, fight week, a couple days before. So you know, was he holding out? And Top Rank was like, you know, maybe they were offering him and he kept saying no. He's like, oh no, it's not for me. It's not for me. And then his price increased and they're like, you know what? Let's give him what he wants or let's figure it out. Let's sweeten the pot. And then Devin Haney was like, oh wow, that's a pretty sweet deal. Maybe I should take it. Because being a free agent with the undisputed titles, that's like a gold mine. Eddie Hearn was going to try to come back at him. And, you know, I'm sure obviously Del Hoyo probably would have made the Golden Boy would have made a play for him. You know, PBC would have made a play for him. You know, it was like it was a lotto ticket.
Do you know, I was thinking about this today. The thing is, though, Devin Haney isn't Canelo. He's not AJ. And if you're Matchroom, PBC, Top Rank, are you really going to want to throw all that money at someone for one fight, getting nothing in return? He literally comes in, raids the cupboards, takes the money, and disappears. You don't get anything back. And I think he probably kind of maybe realized that, and that's why he signed this new deal, whatever it is, if it's true, with Top Rank, because Canelo can do it, AJ can do it, maybe Fury could do it if he became a free agent, because you know with Canelo, you're selling out any stadium is going to be filled by Canelo, and you're probably going to make your money back on all of that sort of stuff. Like, he can go to Vegas, the MGM Grand, T-Mobile, whoever. They're going to give you a site fee because they know that he's going to bring millions of dollars to the strip. Devin Haney ain't doing that.
Right. I mean, you know, he's obviously talented and he's young. He's still got a ton of years left. He's an undisputed champion. He's obviously shown that he has the confidence and the balls to fight the guys to try to make it to the top in terms of legacy. But, you know, having those titles makes him a lot more valuable. So Top Rank is like, well, he has all the titles, you know, like he's the guy. And, you know, these networks, these TV networks and broadcasters, like, they want some type of world title attached to like main events and stuff like that to make it to casual fans to show, oh, hey, look at the world championship fight. Like, I mean, we know how it works, you know, especially with like the WBA and stuff like that. It's like, oh, you know, like they called Ryan Garcia a lightweight world champion when he fought Davis. Like, he's never been a world champion. He got like an interim or whatever, but that doesn't count. But, yeah, I mean, Haney having those titles is like his bargaining chip, you know? And it's also that he's young and he is obviously in the mix with somebody like Gervonta Davis, who would obviously be a big money fight. And even for ESPN and Top Rank, a Stevenson Haney fight, you know, would be a main event on ESPN, maybe an ESPN pay-per-view. I would think they would try to make that regular ESPN. But you know, Top Rank at the end of the day, just like any of these promoters, whether it's like UFC and MMA, Golden Boy with the Zone, Eddie Hearn with the Zone and stuff like that, PBC with Showtime, they have to produce these fights for the network. It's like, hey, we have a contract. Like, you guys have to produce these events for us. Like, give us these fights, you know, make it worth the money that we're paying you. You know, what was the report that Top Rank's ESPN deal is like in just under $100 million or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that they get a pretty penny per fight. And I think some of these smaller shows, I think Top Rank are doing pretty well, you know,
right,
paying, you know, the smaller kind of like next generation type cards, I guess.
Right.
I think they come up trump on those, but it'd be interesting. I mean, we'll never find out, but this one would be interesting, you know, $4 million plus pay-per-view to Haney, $3 million to Lomachenko plus pay-per-view. I think it did 16,000, and I know they did give some tickets away, supposedly around a 3 million gate. So it's going to be interesting. What do you think ballpark for pay-per-view? 100,000, 150 max, I think?
No, I don't think it's 150. I'd probably say 100 or less. I mean, I don't know how. I'm sure ESPN was promoting it on their various platforms. They obviously have a big reach, but I wasn't really like monitoring it. Yeah, I would probably say around the 100,000.
Yeah.
I mean, if it does, I don't know what their break even number is. Obviously, you have to know the. I think what was the reports of the pay? Like 4 or 5 million or something like that?
4 million to Haney, 3 million to Loma.
Yeah, reportedly.
Plus a pay per view upside, depending on whatever sort of deal they struck. Around right. 3 million on the gate on the night. That's unofficial, something I saw on Twitter, but.
Yeah, we don't know if it's real or not.
Tickets for that were like, you could get them for like the nosebleeds for like 40, 50 bucks, like pretty cheap.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the pay-per-view number is, but I think around the 100,000 mark. I had low expectations for the actual pay-per-view performance for the fight, which is unfortunate because it's a great fight and it's an undisputed fight, two of the best fighters in that division. But, you know, Ryan and Tank Davis show that you don't need titles, you know, like when you become famous and you can fight, you become the title itself in terms of financials and gate and selling and pay-per-views and stuff like that. So it's a little different. But let me ask you one last question on this fight. Where does Haney go from here for the rest of the year? And where does Lomachenko go from here for the rest of the year? And I'm talking about just the rest of this year. We don't have to look beyond into 2024.
Haney probably moves up to 140.
I agree with that.
I don't think he wants any type of deal with Shakur or Gervonta Davis.
And it's not even that, though. I think it's his body it's hard for him to make 135. It's just, you know, it's just a part of getting older and physicality. Like, you know, I mean, people might say like, oh yeah, he doesn't want a part of any part of Stevenson or even Davis, but we've seen reports about how difficult it is for him to make 135 now, and even this past week or something. So, yeah, I just think his body is just kind of like, hey, you know, I fought three fights at 135 or these last three fights, and I've been undisputed champ for all three of them, and I beat one of the best guys of the last generation or the last decade or something, and Lomachenko, he's like, I'm going to 140. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
I think Devin goes to 140, which obviously vacates the belt. And I think Loma, with all of the shouts for, you know, Loma should have won or it should have been a draw, and obviously the kind of crazy scorecard that appeared, he gets another shot at one of the titles, which is vacated by Devin. Probably.
Yeah, maybe WBO or something.
Yeah, WBO, because that's one of the original original belts he picked up when he first turned pro. So he has a good relationship with the WBO, or I could even see the WBC giving him a shout, you know, letting him.
Maybe. I mean, it depends. You know, there's obviously politics and the sanctioning bodies too. So wherever they want to lean.
I'll go even further. Devin Haney vacates. WBO or the WBC calls Kambosos and Lomachenko.
No, I don't see that. WBO, maybe. Not WBC. WBA.
Yeah.
WBA goes to Rolly Romero.
Yeah, I mean, he would. Yeah, WBA.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to go to their respective, sides.
WBA will be Gervonta, you mean. Rolly's at 140, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, Gervonta, yeah. That's right.
Gervonta will be raised to, like, super champ or whatever it is, and then, you know, WBC will be fought.
What happened? I thought they were going to take away these, like, meaningless titles, and I don't know. It's never going to end. I'm moving on to the co-main event. Junto Nakatani also remains undefeated at 25-0 with a 12th round KO, a really nasty KO, early contender for a KO of the year, brutal KO. Of Australia's Andrew Maloney, who takes the third professional loss of his career. This was for the WBO super flyweight title of the world. Maloney was down in round 2, round 11, and then ultimately was knocked out in round 12. So Nakatani pretty much had his way with him. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was one-sided, as much as obviously we love the Maloneys on here. I think everyone loves the Maloneys. I don't think she saw anybody have a bad word about the two guys, two of the nicest guys in the sport. And I think it could have been stopped slightly earlier. I think You know, even his corner kind of had a word of him at the end of the 11th, didn't he, going into the 12th, saying that he wanted to stop it because Maloney wasn't staying like in range, like closer up to give Junto like harder time to hit him. He was staying too far away. Maloney was like, no. And then he's okay, well, you know, the moment that you don't do as I say during the 12th round, I'm going to stop it. I think maybe the corner should have been a little bit stronger and then we would have avoided the knockout. But we're, as you say in America, we're Monday night quarterbacking the situation, which is easy to do, right?
Yep.
You know, the corner should have just, if the corner felt like that, it's the 12th round. He's been knocked down already. He's down on points. Maloney's not really a big one hit type of wonder guy that he's going to knock someone out like a Wilder. Just play it safe, live to fight another day. You know, he's always going to complain because he's a warrior and he wants to stay in there. That's where you just have to be strong and think to yourself, you know what? Like, I'm just going to stick to my guns and I'm pulling the plug. You can kick off, you can shout, you can call me a piece of this, piece of that. But a couple of days from now, when you've calmed down, you'll realize that I did the right thing looking back on the fight.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, Maloney's okay. So that's a good thing about it. I think they reported that. I think they took photos right after, right? Him and his brother. Like, so luckily he was all right. But, yeah, what a knockout, man. What a knockout. Nakatani could have a knockout of the year award or awards, depending on who judges it by the end of this year. But yeah, it was a beautiful shot. Beautiful shot. Also on the card, Oscar Valdez in a rematch over 10 rounds gets the unanimous decision win over Adam Bluenose Lopez by scores of 98-92, 98-91, and 97-93. This was an exciting fight, too. If you remember Lopez, when they fought a couple years back, Lopez had knocked down Valdez, but Valdez was still able to get the victory. This time, I don't think either of them went down in this fight, right?
A couple of slips, stuff like that. And then there wasn't the one where like they went down kind of heavy in one of the rounds. I'm thinking of the right one, but. I thought the scorecards were wide. I remember texting you this when the scorecards came out. 98-92, 98-91, 97-93. Unless I was watching a completely different fight, I thought at times Adam was boxing him from range pretty well. You know, to the point where early on he was that confident, he was dropping his hands, riding the ropes, kind of slipping, you know, doing that sort of stuff to the crowd. And then as the scorecards came out, and I was like, you know what, Valdez has probably won it in terms of probably the heavier shots. You know, if it was in terms of like an energy bar, you know, I think he was knocking off more because Adam was, you know, like slipping, sliding, kind of touching him up. At times he was taking all the power off of the punches just so like he was kind of just throwing them. You know, there wasn't taking much power off of Valdez. But yeah, I mean, I thought the right guy won. I just thought the scorecards were kind of crazy to say that. You know, that Lopez had won two rounds. I didn't agree with that at all.
Lopez definitely fought well.
You know, and it's kind of, you know, what was that for him? It's like, I think that's his, you know, it's his fifth loss. It's kind of hard for him, you know, he's just gone in there against Valdez, good fight, got in there against Isaac Dogbe, good fight, lost that, lost another one. So, yeah, you know, at least give him some respect, dude. You know, 97-93, I thought was probably the closest one to correct. And even 96-94, I wouldn't have said was too close because he had some really good rounds. But I'm not going to go back and watch it like people claim they do on Twitter. I saw one guy say he watched back the Haney-Lomachenko fight at slow motion and it took him 2 hours. He wanted to score it correctly so he could post on Twitter. I was like, absolute BS, did you sit and do that today?
Come on, man. You're a boxing fan. You should do that too.
I mean, dude, we watch back fights for the podcast, right? But I'm not going to sit back and watch it in slow motion, a 12-round fight that takes 4 hours, takes 2 hours, sorry. Not a chance.
Let me ask you this on this fight. One last question. Do we see a trilogy eventually? Do we see a third fight?
Dude, you'd
even though Valdez, even though Valdez is 2-0.
I don't think so, but just because of, you know... Poor old Lopez, dude. He's got to rebuild, right? He's got to rebuild. He's got to do something because.
But he's a good opponent, though. Like, and it's. I mean, it's not. And we're not dogging him by saying good opponent. Like, he's a good guy, like, you know, to fight against, you know, and he always has a chance.
How can he fight?
He can fight.
How can I? He kind of like, he doesn't like win rounds convincingly. He like goes in there, he starts well, does this, does that, takes a little bit of time off, goes for a little walk, slips and slides a little bit, lets them back in, then he throws a few more. But like, it's kind of, he doesn't grab your attention for some reason. I don't know. It's kind of like he's just missing something. Like maybe because he doesn't get like these clinical knockouts and stuff, or maybe he takes too much off in a round by going for like a little walk, doing this and doing that. Yeah, there's just something kind of like missing, you know. And, you know, when we're fans of him, you know, he's a great fighter. I've been down the gym to watch him spar and stuff like that. But there's just something missing in his armory at the minute, and I can't really put my finger on what it is. It's just he does everything at like kind of well, but he hasn't got like outstanding speed, outstanding power, stuff like that. He's kind of, yeah, he's just missing that little something to take him on to the next level. Because when he gets to that kind of contender type thing, he always seems to come up unstuck, but it's in close fights. It's like the Dogbe fight was probably like a round or two, and this one should have been closer than it was, in my opinion. Yeah, he's just missing something, and it's kind of hard to nail down what that is right now.
Well, you never know. He could find it. You never know.
Young enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at the experience. Look at the experience he's got. He's with,
right,
and he's probably with, you know, as long as Top Rank still have something in him, you know, they see something in his potential, or, you know, they start using him, unfortunately, like as a B-side, like, I hope not, but maybe so. He's with the right promotion as well. You know, if he can find it,
right,
he can flick the switch and go on to that next gear. Top Rank are excellent at building fighters, just not always the best at keeping them, right, when they've made them, unfortunately.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Rounding out the card, Raymond Muratala. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. Remains undefeated at 18-0 with the second round TKO early night over Jeremiah Nakatilia, who takes the third loss of his career. This is for the WBO Global and NABF lightweight titles of the world. And then also this past Saturday from the Three Arena in Dublin, Ireland on DAZN, Chantel Cameron remains undefeated as well, 18-0 with the majority decision win over Katie Taylor, who takes the first professional loss of his career in her homecoming fight in Ireland. Chantel Cameron retains her undisputed super lightweight titles of the world by scores of 96-94 twice and 95-95. So it was a close fight, unfortunately, for Katie Taylor in the hometown where Conor McGregor was there. Big crowd showed up. She was a superstar there. You know, she didn't get the victory, but doesn't this make the Amanda Serrano fight that more intriguing?
Is it going to be Amanda Serrano now? That's the question, I guess. After this fight, are they going to just run it back? I know there was a rematch clause inserted in it, and Katie said in the ring afterwards, like, you know, I'll see you for the rematch. So they may do another kind of homecoming, I guess, like another fight in Ireland, and it could be the rematch.
Yeah, but if Jake Paul steps in and says no, he's like, come fight us. He's like, I'll add another, you know, a couple hundred thousand or a couple million to the purse or something. You know, Eddie Hearn even said, he was like, if Jake Paul never got involved in the first fight, he's like, that fight would have never been made, because, you know, but him stepping in with his reach and his promotional power and money, it was able to get that fight made and across the line.
I think most fighters would take that if, you know, Jake came in and added an extra zero or added an extra whatever he could to the pot. But I think Katie Taylor's one of those rare people that she's more for legacy, and she probably knows by now, especially after losing this fight, that she hasn't got much left in the tank, and she wants to get those undisputed titles at 140 against Chantel Cameron. And that means more to her than another gnaw or whatever on the paycheck. But 90% of people, you're right, Danny, would take the extra money. But I think she's more for legacy and creating something extra, and she wants another shot at Chantel Cameron at 140, and I think if she loses that, she'll ride off into the sunset with, you know.
So you don't think a Serrano rematch is in the cards for her?
No,
really. No. You think it's just one and done, and she's like, oh, I don't really need to go back.
If she fights Chantel Cameron and beats her, I think she may retire. If she fights Chantel Cameron again and loses, I think she may retire.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was just going to say. Like, whether she wins or loses, I think you're right. Like, I think she's like, oh, I think that's it.
She's slowed down, dude. Like, we said it last week. I picked Katie Taylor to win. I thought she still might have enough. But ever since, like, I think it was like the Delphine Persoon, you could see that she just didn't move as much as she did. And then in the first couple of rounds against Serrano, she was boxing her head off. And I was like, oh, dude, like the Delphine Persoon performance was just like a one-off. And she's noticed that, you know, she was getting dragged into a dogfight and she wasn't moving. And then it was like those legs only had a couple of rounds in them, because the first two rounds maybe of the Serrano, she looked unbelievable. And then the legs just went and she stood in the pocket again. And Serrano just literally stole all of those middle rounds. And then it's like she just woke up at the right time and she managed to win the last remaining rounds and literally sneaked over the line against Serrano when she looked out on her feet in the middle rounds. And I think that's just the case, you know, in this. I think she's got old, and taking nothing away from Chantel Cameron, she was bigger, stronger, used the jab really well, muscled her around. She looked really, 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 really good, you know, Chantel Cameron as well. I think it's just a bit of both. She was too big, too strong. Good game plan, stuck to it, didn't look overawed by the occasion. And unfortunately, I think we've kind of also seen the best of Katie Taylor. And I don't mean that in a negative way towards Chantel Cameron, because she deserved the victory and the scorecards are really good. I did think they were going to rob her when they came out with the, was it like 95-95? And I was like, oh my God, they're going to rob her. And I think it was the next couple of cards were like 96-94 or whatever it was. And luckily they gave it to the right person, and
in Ireland too.
Yeah, exactly. That was the problem. I thought, man, they're going to rob her and they're going to give it to Taylor. But it just being the kind of like the idol of the sport that she is, she was very humble. You know, she didn't blame anything. Congratulated Cameron. Pretty much said, you know, it's your day. Looked really upset. You know, that her homecoming had to, after all the things that she's achieved, her homecoming had to come at the end of her career, and all those people had to see her lose. How bad does that suck, dude? But the fact that she picked Chantel Cameron when she could have fought me or you or some random Joe Schmo that was walking down the street, and that would have sold out that arena. But she wanted to be the person that she is. She wanted to
do. She's a superstar over there, man. She's a superstar over there.
Yeah, and that phrase that we all like to use now, she dared to be great. She wanted to move up to 140 to, you know, become undisputed champion at a second division. And she did that. And obviously it wasn't the homecoming that she won, but fair play to her to do that, when she could have fought absolutely anybody. And that place would have sold out. She would have got the homecoming she wanted. Her arm raised. And
Conor McGregor was there too, hyping it up. He put a lot more eyeballs on it.
Yeah, it just shows you, like, how often does McGregor come out to a fight, right? And he's coming out to watch, you know, Katie Taylor. That just shows how big she is in Ireland. It's just upsetting, you know, the right person won, but it's just kind of upsetting that she didn't get that homecoming.
Yeah, exactly. And also on the card for the IBO super welterweight title of the world, James Metcalf gets the unanimous decision win over 12 rounds against Dennis Hogan by scores of 117-110 twice and 115-112. James Metcalf is now the IBO, as I mentioned, super welterweight champion of the world. So IBO popping up. It's there, man. It's there. So Ed Levine, the president of the IBO, was on our show a couple years back. So if you guys want to listen to the president of the IBO, go back in our archives and listen to that. So he definitely expands. He talks a lot about the IBO and its history and why they feel they should be included in the major sanctioning bodies. And also on the card, Jose Felix gets the third round TKO over Gary Coley, who gets the first professional loss of his career. This was an upset to a lot of people. What'd you think?
It's funny because I think it was Andy Lee literally said, like, I think in the first round, the problem about Coley is, like, you know, he leaves his hands down and he comes forward and leaves his chin exposed. And then in the next round, literally exactly what Andy Lee said happened. And
crazy.
you know, Jose Felix just timed it perfectly. Looked like he just kind of watched in the first round, didn't throw an awful lot, and then you could see that he decided to throw when Cully was throwing, and picture perfect. I think the referee, you know, got a lot of stick and probably could have stopped it, you know, earlier because he got knocked down, got up, got knocked down again, and eventually got finished. But, you know, his corner team can throw in the towel at the same time. Don't, you know, like, I know we're all kind of blaming the referee, but he's in like a sticky situation, isn't he? Because, you know, like he's going to protect him. You know, we don't really see, you know, what Cully's eyes are like. And then Cully's kind of like the major A side as well, right? You know, like he's probably thinking to himself, like, oh shit, like, you know, everyone's here for Cully. You know, don't really want to like spoil the mix, even though he's there to protect him and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a sticky situation for him. You know, I think maybe the second one, it looked like he was kind of completely gone. So get him up, give him that one chance. Then when he got put down again, just be like, yeah, that, you know, that's it, dude. You know, I've kind of given you one chance already. But yeah, Cully, he's just got to fix those minor details. You know, just kind of leaving himself exposed. I think he's just so super confident because he's kind of been going in there and he's always been the bigger guy and just kind of like plowing people out, you know, just going in, moving forward, bullying and knocking people out. So he's kind of become maybe a little bit lazy with his hands and he paid for it.
Yeah, he definitely paid for it. Moving on to fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 27th of May, from the Vitality Stadium. And is it Bournemouth?
Yep, Bournemouth, yep.
Bournemouth on Sky Sports for the WBO cruiserweight title of the world. Lawrence Okoli, 19-0, goes up against the 17-1 Chris Bellum Smith. This is a pretty intriguing fight. What do you think?
Homecoming for Chris Bellum Smith for CBS. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what he's like in front of his home fans, and it's just going to be intriguing because obviously, as everyone knows, Okoli used to be gym buddy of CBS. They used to spar together an awful lot. So, you know, Bellum Smith's going to be getting in there with somebody he knows, you know, really, really, really well. So that's going to be, it's going to be an interesting situation in there to see
who wins.
Not going to sit on the fence. I think Okoli's just too big, too long, already knows him. So he's going to be, you know, very accustomed. It's going to be kind of easier for him in a way. And I think he probably breaks him down and eventually stops him. But I just hope it's not going to be one of the Okoli, you know, snooze fests. I don't know where we can watch it in the US so far. That's why I just put Sky Sports. I'm hoping somebody picks it up over here, you know, so we get a chance to watch it.
Right.
But yeah, hopefully it's a little bit better than normal because of the fact they know each other. I think it may start slowly and then eventually catch fire. And I think Okoli probably finishes Bellum Smith off because he's a little bit too easy to hit. I think like round, I think he's going to be kind of late. I think like round 10 or 11, I think he catches him. And Okoli wins by TKO or KO.
Also this upcoming weekend in a rematch, which is likely to end in a knockout again, like the first fight. From the Manchester Arena in Manchester on DAZN, Mauricio Lara, the WBA featherweight champion of the world, 26-2-1, goes up against Lee Wood, 26-3. The first fight, Lara, you know, it was a fight, and Lara ended up getting the knockout, I think, in the middle rounds. Is it inevitable? Do we see it again? I think it's going to be an entertaining fight. Wood's going to definitely, you know, try to go for it, but Lara's just... he's one of those guys, since he kind of came into the scene like on the big national level, he knocks everybody out. Should we expect that again?
The interesting fight, dude. It's an interesting fight. Like you said, the TKO in the seventh round in the first fight. And the first fight was only February the 18th. So there's only 3 months between fights.
Fast turnaround.
It's a fast turnaround. Yeah, it's literally just like the fight we spoke about before. Lee Wood had a very good game plan. You know, was probably up on the cards, if I remember rightly, at the time. But Lara just waited and waited and waited, and he just hooked with a hooker. Came off second best. You know, Lara, you know, just knocked him out. So I think it's going to go the same way again. I want to back a Brit. I want to back a Brit. You know, I want to be one of those guys that, you know, back your own. But I don't see it. I think it could be the same thing. I think he could be outboxing him, but Wood just likes to get in there and throw leather. And I think it will get to that point where he gets tired, doesn't move around as much. And at some point, he's just going to go resort back to those kind of like animal instincts of, you know, just kind of throwing to throw. And Lara will catch him again. I think it's going to be, a late stoppage this time, though. Because I think Wood's going to stick to the game plan. And he knows he's going to be on it for all 12 rounds. But I think it's kind of like the Wilder thing, exactly the same as the Wilder thing but against Fury when, you know, he has to be perfect for 36 minutes. I just have to be perfect for that 1 second. And I think that's what it's going to be. I think it's going to be a similar, like, late 8-9 round. I think he catches him and unfortunately takes him out again.
It's going to be an entertaining fight, I think, regardless.
Yeah.
Lara is just one of those guys, especially. He's in it and, you know, his fights don't end in decisions. They just don't. So, and like you said, Wood likes to throw leather. Yeah, it's going to be a barn burner just like the first one. So we will see. In the co-main event, Jack Catterall, 26-1, goes up against, is it Dara?
Yeah, Dara Foley.
Dara Foley, 22-4-1. Jack Catterall, you know, maybe still wants a Josh Taylor rematch. I don't know if he's going to be able to get it. Do you think it's going to happen by the end of the year or no?
See, that's a hard one, you know, because they both seem to have gone their different routes. I think you will probably see, you know, Regis Progre has got that upcoming fight in New Orleans. He's obviously signed with Eddie, and I'm sure Eddie's told him, like, hey, you're going to probably told both of them, Jack, you're going to get the Progre fight, and probably told Progre, hey, you're going to get the Jack fight eventually. We're just going to give you a couple of fights to, you know, get you in the win column, and then eventually we'll face off against each other because it's an easy fight to make, right? With Josh Taylor essentially being with you know, top rank in the US. So it's going to be an interesting fight. This is a good one for Jack to come back, obviously after a long layoff, and he gets himself in there with Dara Foley, who, you know, essentially won himself a little matchroom contract when he fought you know, Robbie Davis Jr. and kind of won by TKO when Davis broke his leg.
You know? Yeah, technically.
Yeah, he went down as a third round TKO, and essentially he was kind of like the Conor McGregor thing where his leg just kind of broke, you know, when he stepped back. But yeah, you know, Foley, you know, got himself a matchroom contract, didn't he, for a couple of fights. So, you know, good for him. But yeah, I see Jack Catterall coming back, schooling Foley, to be honest with you. Late stoppage, or he just schools him for 10, 12 rounds and then just goes on and hopefully calls out someone, you know, build some hype.
And then for the WBA super welterweight title, Terry Harper, 13-1-1, goes up against Ivana Habizin.
Yes. Rearranged fight. Terry Harper, the fight got called off on fight day, I think. It was either the weigh-in or fight day. Was supposed to fight Cecilia Breakers. She woke up, had a cold, had the flu, couldn't fight.
Right.
So yeah, they delayed this Terry Harper.
Just happened last week too, right?
Yeah, just delayed it a week. So that's good for Terry Harper, right? And then, unfortunately, Breakers couldn't make it. So, it's, you know, Habizin steps in. Good fight for her. It's actually kind of a tricky fight because, you know, Terry Harper moving up, she has added a lot of size to her. So it's going to be interesting because Ivana Habizin is experienced, was the word I was looking for. She's obviously, you know, got a lot of experience. So this is a good test for Harper.
And it also this upcoming weekend from the SSE Arena in Belfast, Ireland, Luis Alberto Lopez, 27-2, goes up against Michael Conlan for the IBF featherweight title of the world. This is a homecoming fight for Conlan, fighting in his home country. So we'll see how he does because his only loss of his career was against Lee Wood. Right?
He loses this fight. Yeah.
Really? Wow.
I actually think he might get absolutely schooled.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to go on record.
Yeah, Lopez. This isn't an easy fight for Conlan. Lopez can fight.
Yeah, if people remember, Luis Alberto Lopez jumped to our screens when he essentially schooled Josh Warrington.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's very, very, very unorthodoxed. Throws punches from crazy angles. He's another one of those Sean Gibbons, Manny Pacquiao type of guys. Yeah, I think he schools Conlan because he's just very unorthodox, throws stuff from very weird angles, he pressures you constantly, just something that you can't really train for. And I think it's going to take you a long time to figure it out, and I don't think Conlon will. Because if you look at Conlon coming up, he struggled with people that Top Rank were kind of putting him in with to essentially build him. You know, when he had him on all those like East Coast fights, using the Irish contingent and stuff like that, and he didn't look good then. And I think this is going to be, I think he might get schooled, honest to be honest with you.
Oof. Well, if he doesn't, we're going to get him on as a guest and you're going to confront him.
And I'm going to,
like, I went against you.
And I'm going to run it back and say, I didn't say that.
And then also this upcoming weekend from the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, the Coachella Valley of Southern California, on DAZN, Alexis Lex Rocha, 22-1, goes up against Anthony Young, 24-2. And this is for the WBO and NABO welterweight title of the world, a Golden Boy Promotions event in the Coachella Valley of Southern California. How long until... Actually, what do you think about this fight before we ask what the future holds? What do you think about this fight?
It's another fight to keep Lex busy, keep him in our minds, keep him winning instead of kind of like sitting on the shelf, which I think is good. But I do just... I do worry at times that, what happens if they keep sticking him out in these fights when he's highly ranked, then, you know, he gets caught, or, you know, he takes the eye off the ball, or he's looking at the next fight or something like that, and he slips up because he's highly ranked.
Yeah, but he's not going to get a title shot at welterweight. He's not.
But just at like least get him a payday.
They're not going to get title shots. They're just not. They're all with PBC.
No, but... I'll say no title shot, but then get him a payday, get him a, like a big name, get him like a Keith Thurman, stick him in there with Virgil Ortiz and get like some huge payday for them both. That's what I'm saying. You know, I think it's great that he's keeping himself.
If you get him a payday with like a Keith Thurman or somebody on the PBC Showtime side, you're going to have to send them over there. And I don't think Golden Boy and DAZN want to let another fighter go across the street like that.
I think they would, but I think it's like, I think they would, because Oscar would do that, but probably not with PBC, because PBC will never let anybody do it the other way. So they're probably like, well, why are we going to send our guys over there if you never, ever, ever share any of the toys in boxing, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, all these promoters that, you know, don't really necessarily like sharing, you know, they're all kind of the same. I mean, it's a business, but...
I think
him and Virgil Ortiz are just going to be stuck treading water, and it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate, but what are you supposed to do? At least they're staying active. Or Rocha's fights a lot throughout the year. Like, he stays active.
You know, yeah, 100% they stay active, and that's the good thing about him. Is I just hope that, you know, keep being super professional, keep winning. You know, he's 22-1, you know, going into the fight. This is his second fight this year, George Ashe, then Anthony Young. Last year, three fights, two fights in, you know, 2021. So, yeah, he's been active over the last few years. And, yeah, just looking forward to eventually.
I mean, like, if you can't get the big fights or the world titles, the next best thing is just to stay active and hope that you get them and you've been active. I mean, you know, I think him and Golden Boy are doing all they can. You know, and there's fighters like that within every promoter stable, you know, but Rocha is one of them where he's like, he's doing the next best thing. It's just staying active until hopefully he gets a shot somewhere.
He's only 25 as well.
Yeah. So he still has a lot of time, but yeah, him and Virgil Ortiz, they're not going to get title shots at 147. They're just Virgil Ortiz, especially. I think he's going to have to move up without getting a title shot, but Rocha has a little bit of a time to work at, but even him, like, he's outgrowing that weight as well. So, I mean, we'll see, you know?
I think that's what it'll take. It'll take Crawford and Spence either to move up or retire eventually. The belts will obviously become vacant, and I think that's when Rocha will, you know, get a chance to step in, because he's highly ranked in, obviously, the WBO. And last time I spoke to him, you know, he said behind the scenes that his team and Crawford's team were kind of chatting, you know, trying to work out, like, financials and stuff like that, but...
It's been like that for a long time. Crawford's been a free agent away from Top Rank for a while now. So,
yeah,
I mean, we'll see. We've been hearing sometime toward the end of summer, you know, from certain people that we've talked to. So, and they sounded very confident how they told us. So, but we'll see how it works out. News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Ryan Garcia will now train with Derek James in Dallas, Texas, as Derek James becomes his new trainer after splitting with Joe Goosen after the loss to Gervonta Tank Davis in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago. Ryan Garcia will now campaign at 140 pounds. He's there with Anthony Joshua, Errol Spence, the Charlos. So I think it is good for Ryan, regardless of people think, for him to get out of Southern California in the LA area and go to somewhere, another area like that, like Texas. It gets him away from all the celebrity and social media and all that stuff and gets him away from his comfort zone. So we'll see, man. He's still a young kid. But let's see how he handles the discipline in the gym over there with those fighters. That's definitely going to be interesting. Definitely going to be interesting.
Do you think he will?
Well, you got to wait and see, you know? Wait and see. I mean, he was with Canelo and Reynoso. That obviously didn't work out. With Goosen, he was with a couple fights. Yeah. And then he loses to Davis. And, okay, I mean, every fighter, even De La Hoya said it in an interview when they asked him about it. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, the fighter, when you lose, you always look for other people to blame and you immediately fire your trainer. You go to another trainer. I mean, De La Hoya had a bunch of trainers as well. So it's not like it doesn't happen. But let's see how it works out for him. I think that it's good that he got away from the Southern California LA area because he needed to get away from that area because I think it was just too toxic for him. And him being in South Texas or Dallas like that, it's good for his environment around him and being around champs like that. All those guys, like, they're not, you know, Spence and the Charlos, they're not active, which sucks, but, you know, I'm sure that gym trains pretty hard, but they're just not active fighters. So, you know, we'll see. Is Ryan Garcia going to, you know, be the same and not be active? Or hopefully not, but that would suck.
It's like anything, right? And any type of training or whatever, when he needs to buy into it. He needs to realize that, you know, the stuff that he's been doing and trying to dictate, like how many times he trains, you know, when he trains and all that sort of stuff. He needs to buy into what Derek James says. He needs to sit there and he needs to watch like the Charlos, the Frank Martin, the Errol Spences and all those guys. And, you know, kind of like what Robert Garcia said about Joshua, right? You need to be in a gym with, you know, other boxers, other things, and you need to be the guy that's like setting, you know, how hard work is. Kind of like what he had with Canelo, essentially.
But yeah, exactly.
That didn't seem to rub off on him. You know, no. So like you said, like he needs to move to Texas, keep his team small, just his dad and his brother, people that aren't going to distract him and make him, you know, like not go to training on time and, you know, fuck around and do whatever else he was doing and just be an uber fucking professional because it's a short career.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also former lightweight champion George Kambosos Jr. has signed a co-promotional deal with Top Rank. He's promoted by Lou DiBella. He had a deal with Top Rank, right? Like, and then it expired. So he signed. This is another one. This is the second one. So he has another deal with them. There's a multi-fight deal. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out. You know, they're obviously going to use him for, you know, opponents for maybe. Maybe Haney again if they need it, since Haney kind of re-upped with them, but I mean not right away.
Loma,
yeah, Loma Kambosos, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, Lomachenko Kambosos, that'd be an interesting fight, you know, just based on their past fights and stuff like that. So yeah, I was wondering, and I was just like, because I knew after Kambosos has lost his titles to Haney and lost the two fights. I assumed that the Top Rank deal was over, but, you know, and then him being with DiBella, I mean, he had somebody there, but you obviously need to do business with these bigger promoters. So Top Rank gave him another multi-fight deal. So gives him a couple more paydays. So, but I'm sure those fights are going to happen in the United States. I don't think he's going to have Australian fights, at least not for now. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because when they sign Kambosos, and then you look at obviously Top Rank stable, they've got the Maloney brothers. You know, they've got three big Australian fighters, right? So you do wonder, like, are they going to do some type of special card down there for, like, Kambosos and the Maloneys and have them all on one big show? You know, that would sell. So it'll be, interesting to see what they do, especially what they do with Kambosos. You know, still young, you know, former undisputed, stuff like that, putting bums in seats in Australia. So it's going to see what the what type of movement, you know, are they going to do with him? Are they going to, you know, position him back in for like another run? Is he become more of like an opponent type thing? So, yeah, I'm good. It's going to be interesting to see how they match him. He comes across like a pretty nice guy, doesn't he, Kambosos?
Yeah, he's been on the show here too in the past. So
yeah, I spoke to him before. He fought Selby, I think it was.
Yeah, Lee Selby. So hopefully we get him back on again before the end of this year. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to the Last Round podcast this week, episode 222. And this episode is our second episode on Twitter. So we're going to start publishing our episodes on Twitter as well, on our Twitter account, in addition to obviously the regular podcasting apps like Apple, Spotify, and all that. So we're going to keep trying to do that. So that'd be great. So as we sign off towards the end of the finish line here for this week's episode, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week. But it's a pretty quiet week. We've got a few small fights from Marv Nation in Pechanga, California, and then also looking forward
Temecula,
to
Temecula, California. Pechanga Casino. California.
Sorry, yeah, Pechanga Casino. And then also the Clarissa Shields, Hannah Gabriel's fight.
Yeah, quiet week, but we'll figure something out. We'll look at some guests, see if we can get somebody on to talk boxing. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.